Hey everyone, this is Camden. Before we get into today's episode, I want to introduce you to five more talents. You may have heard about them, but they're a significant organization that's doing valuable work for churches today. They've been around since 2009, and Five More Talents has been partnering with churches to develop websites, helping more than 150 confessional Presbyterian and Reformed churches establish a strong online presence. You know this is tough, and a lot of churches struggle to develop such a presence. America also is rapidly de-churching, and many congregations are feeling the weight of this shift, but Five More Talents is here to help. Now, you might be surprised, but more people are searching online for churches and for spiritual answers than ever before. And now, with Five More Talents, your church can connect with them in new ways. So join Five More Talents' free online community. You can also participate in their free webinars. And if you do so, your church can receive step-by-step guidance on how to reach unchurched people in your community. But Five More Talents goes beyond website development as well. They help churches fulfill the Great Commission in a digital age. Visit fivemoretalents.com to learn more. Welcome to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. This is episode number 884. As usual, each and every week, I'm in Libertyville, Illinois, at the Reformed Forum headquarters, and I'm happy to be back with another excellent guest and an excellent topic. Today, we are welcoming back to the program Dr. Ben Glad. But Ben now is Executive Director of the Carson Center for Theological Renewal at the Gospel Coalition. Welcome back, Ben. It's good to see you today.
Oh, it's so good to be here. As usual, I'm always envious of your bookshelves. I'm like, man, those are some.
You know, people ask me sometimes. More than a few people have asked if that background is real, and I even one time went and grabbed a book off of it and showed the guy, and he goes, "So is it real?"
I said, <"Well." laughs> "I don't believe you."
So I'm saying this is a pretty nice. Pretty great magic trick. If I could do live CGI like that and actually grab objects off my background and show them to you, right. We don't have that kind of budget here at Reformed.
That's right. That's right.
But yes, yeah. It is a bit of a trick. I am very thankful for the space that I can have my books and stuff in the studio here. And otherwise, I got to be in my house, and my wife isn't going to be too happy with that because we don't have enough room for them with three boys and all the other stuff that comes along with them.
Right.
But at the same time, there is a bit of smoke and mirrors. If I zoomed the camera out, you know, you'd see the lights hanging down. You'd see things in the way. But whatever this camera is looking at right here, I guess that there's a meta lesson here about worldviews and perspectives and that type of thing.
That's right.
So we're happy today, though, to be back. And you're coming in from a different location. I don't know if you'd care to mention to people, but with your new work, you moved from Jackson and moving on from RTS Jackson and the good folks down there. But now with your work with the Carson Center, you're freed up to be in a different place in the country.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So we moved back in May, and I started at TGC June 1st of 24. So it's been, 5 months or so. And I mean, every day is just kind of a race to the finish to get all this stuff done. And it's been great. Lots of fun.
Have you been able to move your workshop? I always love hitting you up with questions about woodworking. Has all that stuff come along with you?
I moved it, and it was not cheap.
I bet.
I can tell you that. And it's in my garage. I built a third bay, and so my workshop is in my third bay. Mm-hmm. And it's maybe 60% up and running. I had to build some bookshelves, you see.
Yeah.
Speaking of bookshelves, I don't know if you can see these.
Oh, there we go. Nice work.
We finished our basement. These are 9-foot ceilings here in our basement.
That's nice.
And about a third of the basement is just my office. So this is actually two rooms that we made into one room. And so half of it is my library. The other half of it is my desk and all my stuff. So this is where I work. That's where I pull books off the shelf.
Yeah.
And it's great. Yeah, so I had to build those books or I had to build those shelves like a month ago. And then do you see the wainscoting behind me? I put that up about a week ago. And yeah, so I mean it's functional, but I need it to warm up a little bit before my
that's the problem. All right, we're
gonna So I've got about 40% left to do.
We're gonna nerd out today about New Testament and stuff, but while we got people on the line, and you know, I got it. And while you're on the line, I got to nerd out a little bit and ask you just a few very brief questions. People that don't want to hear this, I put chapter markers into the episode. You can skip to different chapters, or if you're watching on YouTube, there are chapter markers you can click the different time codes. So don't worry. This liberated me when I realized I could put chapter markers in. That frees me up. I don't have to be so sensitive to people's comments about chit chat about football or this, that, and the other. But I do want to ask you real briefly, because I've asked you before offline privately about dovetail jigs, all this kind of stuff. You spoke to me about the Festool Domino. One of the, and now I've seen, I don't get anything on YouTube, but Festool Domino recommendations and Domino Killer suggestions. Like my entire personal YouTube is taken up with woodworking stuff. Everyone's talking about the Domino. I want to hear your take on the Domino, because you, another friend of mine, Joe Christman's got one. One of our elders at church has borrowed one from his guy, one of his colleagues. And so I want to give a little bit of a moment for you to talk about something other than theology or New Testament just for a moment and explain what a wonderful thing the Festool Domino is and why it might be useful for people.
Yeah, so the idea here is to create something to carve out in the wood a place for the tenon to go between two pieces of woods. I mean, this is really what half of woodworking is. 80% of woodworking is joining two pieces of wood. And the idea is to do it easily, efficiently, with a very strong bond. And the tenon, you know, screws, they are tight, but they're not really. So the way to do it is with a tenon. And so the Festool Domino is going to hollow out, it's just going to carve out that piece in the wood so that the tenon floats. So it's called a floating tenon. I think that's how it's specifically called.
Right.
A floating tenon. So it mortises out, it carves out the gap, and then you put the floating tenon inside it. You buy the tenons at all these different sizes. You just put some glue. So the domino goes in, it mortises, it carves out the appropriate length. It's all preset. You have these different presets on the device, on the machine, and then it goes in and mortises it out, and then you put the tenon right in there. And you're able to have so much flexibility. I can do an entire line of tenons in just minutes, and they're really, really strong. You can even make it a little bit bigger if you want to move the workpiece around. So maybe if you're not sure about aligning the two work pieces, you can actually make them. You can make the
cut them
the
wider, so you can
wider yeah. so that you can yeah. work with it. Or if you're dead on, you don't want it. You right. want a really strong bond. You can even cut that out. In fact, what they're starting to do now, they're now doing a furniture type tenons, just like you buy it like IKEA, where you have a tenon and then you rotate it and it pulls it together.
Yeah.
So that's, I don't have it. I haven't tried it. I haven't needed that, but that's a great way to do furniture pieces.
So for the people who might,
that way you can take it apart and put it back together.
Correct.
Which is really cool.
Yeah, well, yeah. And that those IKEA style fasteners are really handy. So you can make some of those at home for your own thing. So if you're doing dovetail jigs or box joints, dovetail joints or box joints, that can still be decorative. But for the people who might not know why this is valuable. Let's say you're going to make a tabletop. Unless you have some giant tree or you're doing something live edge, you're going to be making that from multiple boards. And then to connect the two, you need something stronger than just glue. Because if you're going to be using it as like a dining room table, if it's only glued, you know, who knows? You put something heavy on that, over time it might fall apart. So what Ben's talking about is a device, a very special tool that'll cut a pocket on both sides of the pieces of your tabletop, and then you put the little domino in, which I guess serves as a floating tenon.
Right.
And then goes into either pocket on either side, and then you glue the whole thing together, and you got a super strong joint, and
you can build tabletops. People build kitchen cabinets.
Anything.
You can build anything. I use it on anything. I mean, it really is my go-to. That Domino, and then my track saw are, mm-hmm. I mean, I use those all the time. It's really a,
that's yeah, probably one of my next purchases, a track saw, because putting a 4x8 sheet of plywood on a table saw is not going to happen.
I can rip it in 2 seconds. Just lay down. I would just rip it. Like, see these, see the wainscoting here. So this is a quarter. This is a maple.
Yeah.
This is a quarter inch maple that I just ripped with my track saw on a 4x8 sheet. And I just ripped them into, like, these are 3 and maybe 9/16 or something.
It. Do you put the insulation under it, under your track saw? You've seen people do that.
Yeah, do 2-inch foam piece.
Genius. Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm cutting concrete. It's not, the blade's not going to work so well after that.
Man, so this concludes our woodworking section of the podcast. But this is kind of like a dream of mine, although I realize it's not realistic, is to have an entire other podcast that I interview biblical scholars and theologians about things completely unrelated to their field, like some other hobby that they have. I think that would be the greatest podcast.
It would be. And you know who's a woodworker is Don Carson.
Oh, really?
I don't know if you know that. Yeah,
I didn't.
He was a woodworker. Yeah. And he loved working with walnut. And he was just telling me, we had lunch a little bit ago, and he told me that walnut is his favorite type of wood to work with, and he always enjoyed building stuff. So
I think walnut's my favorite wood. It's probably my least favorite tree. The black walnut. I've been nailed by a bunch of those. They're messy. They destroy your cars, all sorts of stuff. But walnut trees.
I think it is. I actually think that walnut is my favorite wood to work with. I like the smell of it. The density's just right. Yeah. It's super pretty. Mm-hmm. I really couldn't ask for anything more than that wood. It really is. I think it is my favorite.
You're speaking my language, man. I love it. Well, today we're talking about not only the woodworking, we're going to get into the Carson Center, but I got a couple things to announce relative to Reform Forum. We have two new publications. We have quite a few in the works, so a lot more to come this next year. But I do want to announce and remind people of a couple new publications that we've already announced through our email newsletter. I've mentioned them on the program before, and we just recently had a Black Friday sale. But you can still get copies of Dan Ragusa's book, Fullness of Joy, which is a biblical theology of God with us. It's a delightful little booklet. It's just 80 pages or so. It includes a scripture index, but this is a wonderful thing. It's kind of up your alley, Ben, in terms of a biblical theological study. There have been lots of studies on this topic, but this one is a great little stocking stuffer. Dan wrote it, did an excellent job. We also have an entirely free video course that is a companion to this book. So we're selling this book in individual copies. You can also get 10 packs at a much reduced price, and it goes along with a free video course. So we recommend reading this for personal study. It'd be good for families, perhaps, but even more so Bible studies and group book studies. You could read the book, watch the video together, talk about it. It's a great companion. We also have Order in the Offices, second edition. This I haven't shown. Last time I mentioned it on the podcast, I didn't have my copy in the studio with me. But this is a second edition of the book that was edited by Mark Brown about 30 years ago. It includes essays defining the roles of church officers. So whether you agree or not, or you're just curious, this is a book that advocates for what's known as a three-office view, arguing that ruling elders and ministers are distinct offices, though related, of course. And there's an entire whole host of excellent articles on this, a lot of them getting into not only theological cases, but exegetical cases. So this is a book, I think, that's useful for all officers in the church. And again, whether you agree or not, it's good to be familiar with the three office arguments, even if you're 2.5 office, so to speak, or a 2-office guy. This is an excellent presentation of a 3-office view of several of them. And I think we really executed well on this book. It's Smithsonian hardcover, got a beautiful jacket design from David Fassett. It's cloth cover. It's got the nice blue foil gilding stamped on the spine. So I'm really proud of this and thankful for the team, not only for Mark for being willing to publish a second edition with us, but for the whole team, Peg Grimm, especially our publishing coordinator, for getting this thing done. We love it. So check it out. Order in the Offices, second edition, Essays Defining the Roles of Church Officers, on sale now. Head on over to reformedforum.org/store for information on how to get these books. We'd love to ship them out to you quickly. All right, Ben, let's talk a bit now about, we've already got our woodworking, we've got our Reform Forum promo. Oh, one other thing, people, mark your calendars, December 20th, Friday, December 20th, noon to 4 p.m. Central Time. For those people who live in the Eastern time zone who don't know that time zones exist, so that's 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern. Now, Ben, you're still in Eastern.
I know. I'm well aware now.
No, I'm not busting your chops, but I'm saying now you're still in Eastern time zone, but you, having lived in Wheaton, realize that you just get used to subtracting one from every time you see.
Oh, I know. The worst is Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. Terrible.
Exactly. For me, it was reverse. Every time I moved back to, when I moved to Philadelphia for 5 years, I had to take the take all the times seriously. I used to have to subtract one. I always found myself showing up for things an hour early. But from noon to 4 Central Time, 1 to 5 Eastern Time, we're having our first annual. Again, my wife says I should never call anything a first annual, but I'm sure this is going to be so good, we're going to have to do it again. We're having our Christmas extravaganza. So it's a 4-hour live stream event on Friday, December 20th. It's going to be complete with guests, a live podcast. We're going to have people calling from other countries to talk about what the Lord's doing in their place, their neck of the woods. We're going to have games. We're going to have listener interaction. We're working on a musical guest. So this is going to be like an old school telethon, Ben, except in the YouTube live stream version. So maybe we'll call you up. We'll see what's going on.
I think I'm actually busy at that. I do think that I'm busy on the 20th.
After you heard about what this event was, all of a sudden you're busy. You've got an ox to check out or something like that, I'm sure. Got to bury your father.
I got some woodworking to do in the snow.
Got some woodworking? Yeah. Okay. Well, we appreciate it. Check everyone who might be interested in that. There's more information on that at reformedforum.org as well. We'd love to have you with us. Watch the live stream. Dip in for a few minutes or not. If you're in the area and you're interested in coming in person, send us a note, mail@reformedforum.org. We can maybe work something out. So we're excited about that. All right. So let's get into matters at the Carson Center. I saw the news back several months ago when Colin Hansen, I think, posted what amounts to kind of a press release on the Gospel Coalition website, mentioning that you, Ben, are now the inaugural executive director for the Carson Center for Theological Renewal at TGC. Excited to see that and excited to see all the different work that you're doing and the plans that you have for the future. But I'd love for you to maybe take a moment to talk about the Carson Center in general and Dr. Carson's involvement with TGC, because that's a significant background piece to this center. But what is the center? What are the particular aims, and what are your goals and hopes for the future?
Yeah, thanks so much. It's fascinating. So this started in some sense in the spring of 2004 when I was applying to Wheaton College for their PhD program, and the students have to fly into Wheaton. And you are interviewed by the professors. There's a committee there, and so you sit down in this room, and you're terrified. You've never experienced anything like this,
right?
And Dr. Mu, I remember Dr. Doug Mu was there, Greg Beal was there, and then maybe Dan Trier was in the room too. So it was something like that.
Yeah.
Doug Mu said, "Now again, this is 2004. There was only one other class. There was only one class before me who had started the program. I would have been the second year." And so again, Doug Moo's like, "Ben, why would you come to Wheaton College? We just started this thing. We hope it's good. We don't know if it's good." He didn't quite say it like that, but that's what he was getting at.
Sure.
He's like, "What would you do with a Wheaton College PhD?" And I said, "Doug," all right, probably Dr. Mu. I said, "Dr. Mu, I want to start a local church biblical theology study center where we do biblical theology. We write it, we teach it out. We do it through the local church. People come. It's this kind of like this center for biblical theology. And in some sense, I've never lost that. That's always been a part of me. And when I was a pastor for a couple of years in California, I did that. Mm-hmm. And then when I went to RTS in the spring in January of 2012, that's when I became a full-time seminary prof. So all that to say is last summer when Sandy Wilson, he's the interim president of mm-hmm. TGC, he emailed me, said, "Ben, Don Carson would like you to attend this meeting with me, with Don, with Colin Hansen, and someone else, and for the Carson Center." And I replied, I said, "Oh, I'm so honored to be there or to come. I don't know what you're talking about. What is this Carson Center thing?" Because right. it was unannounced. And then that's when Sandy filled me in on what it was. And so when I was there, a part of that sort of like an architecture type meeting, designing what the Carson Center would be, as soon as I was a part of it, I was like, this is amazing. I've always wanted to do something like that. Now, even though I love being in the classroom and I love teaching, it has always been a part of me to really get biblical theology to the masses. What I had not envisioned, though, when Doug Moo asked me in 2004, I was thinking more in terms of like local church. But what this is, what this center is doing, I mean, you're now reaching millions of people, and it really is in the millions. You should see our traffic. I mean, it's absolutely gigantic. And so really what we're doing is now on a biblical theology for the world on a global scale. And we're able to take what we have to create more resources, to do all these amazing things with the Bible, to teach it out. And what I think it's so unique about the Carson Center compared to other websites is that we just give it away. Mm-hmm. We're able to, because of TGC and people partnering with us, we create all these things and then we turn right around and we just hand them out. And I think that's what really makes us special, is that here we are, we're historically reformed, we're confessional, we have a very high standard, it's very, very good quality, and yet we turn right around and just hand it out. And so I think that's what makes the Carson Center unique. It's sort of mm-hmm. in the spirit, Tim Keller. You have the Keller Center, which is cultural engagement, apologetics, Don Carson, biblical theology. And mm-hmm. so here we have, that's what really marks the Carson Center. It's this devotion to biblical theology, the story of the Bible, making that accessible, producing all these amazing resources for the global church.
Yeah, that's wonderful. That's very much in line with what we have the hopes for and what we desire at Reform Forum, to see the church grow. It's wonderful to hear about those things and to encourage you in that work. And Lord willing, more and more people around the world will come to see Christ revealed in all of Scripture. And that's just a wonderful thing. And removing all barriers to that, whether that be financial or technological or linguistic, whatever those barriers would be, is a good thing. And we should all be about working and partnering together to advance the knowledge of Jesus Christ, and not just the product of that knowledge, but also the method and how to read our Bibles, how to understand mm-hmm. it. This is all really important. And some of mm-hmm. us who've been around the block for a while might take that stuff for granted, but most people don't know these things. And
Carson has a great line. He's filled with these one-liners. And there are 85% of global pastors, not here in the U.S., but global pastors, 85% of them have not taken one seminary class.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's probably even worse than that. My guess is that's probably even a conservative number. Mm-hmm. 85% have not, but 100% of them have access to the internet. Mm-hmm. And so we can, that means that, hey, there's something there. There's a gigantic need for theological education. And we can do it. We can get it through the internet. We can gift it virtually.
Absolutely.
And so it's wide. I mean, you know this. Of course, you know this. It's absolutely wide open there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've been working at this as well, in much the same way. We have similar thoughts and convictions about these things. You know, Reform Forum is producing free online video courses. We have 27 or so of them online. We're working at, you know, doing another six this year and putting those out for free. And it's such a excellent, wonderful feeling just to know that mm-hmm. you're not putting up this wonderful material and then expecting some guy in Kenya to cough up $50 or something to download mm-hmm. this course, but then relying on the Lord and relying on your supporters to be able to fund and these resources so that you can give them away. And mm-hmm. and we found that the people have been willing to do that. So whether through the mm-hmm. Carson Center, Reform Forum, or other organizations, I just think it's such a better way to do it. We have so many riches here in the U.S. We can come up with the funds
that's right.
to produce this stuff.
And you know what? People get excited about the Bible. I mean, mm-hmm. they get excited about sports and the Bible.
exactly.
Yeah. And you know so when you start talking about providing the Bible in different mediums and mm-hmm. different packaging it differently, whether it's through courses or through podcasts or through mm-hmm. books or whatever, people get really excited about that. And you know, we're really trying to leverage that in unique ways at the Carson Center.
Now, I know you've got some really wonderful things coming that aren't ready to be announced and totally publicized, but a lot of stuff already is available and is for public consumption. But can you describe some of the key programs or maybe initiatives that are currently underway at the Carson Center? What are the kinds of things you do
yeah.
and how can people learn and grow through your efforts?
So, yeah, there are a couple things. One is we just completed a book-by-book commentary in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation. That's on our website, and that's freely available. What's unique about that? What's unique in a number of ways. Number one, it's evangelical. It's conservative, high view of scripture. That's huge. Not all commentaries. Most commentaries cannot state that, unfortunately. So it's conservative. It's book by book. It's pretty thorough. It comes in at under a million words. And we leverage multimedia in it. So like, for example, if you're in Matthew's gospel and you go to Bethlehem, so you're there in Matthew 2 and you can actually explore Bethlehem. So we embed all these different multimedia type pieces throughout the commentary to make it very interactive. You can access it on your phone, iPad, your laptop, whatever. Now, Crossway has that commentary in their possession right now, and they are editing it. Their edit should be done by the end of 2025. They will release a hard copy that will be available for purchase. Oh. Some people like hard copies, yeah. so that's going to be a one volume. I believe it's one volume. I can't remember what the latest is. Mm-hmm. See, the one or two volumes, I think it's just one volume. Commentary that they will produce. So it's our work. They're going to produce it. And then once they're done editing, we have money set aside for two translations, Arabic and Spanish.
Wow.
The Arabic translation has already begun. The first five books of the Old Testament, the Torah, they have been completed, at least an initial translation. So we will then take that Crossway edit, and we will immediately start to translate it in Arabic and Spanish. And it's hard, you know, we really have an embarrassment of resources here in the West. Mm-hmm. Not so in the Middle East. They do not have these pieces, these projects like this in their own language, and not even Spanish. So yeah, so we're trying to figure that out. And a lot of people love to give to translation projects. Yeah. Now, that combined, what's very interesting now is, you know this, with AI can accelerate translation. Now, I'm not mm-hmm. saying you hit click and translate and there you go. You still have to have
but it gives you a leg up. You know, it helps us get started and it reduces the time. And then we have our experts, yeah. you know, verify things, double
you
check.
You clean it up. Mm-hmm. Right, you clean it up. But it can cut down significantly right. on the amount of time devoted to these projects. So there's a lot of very interesting things going on. So that's our comment. That's kind of our pride and joy mm-hmm. that was completed last year. So that's, again, it's hanging out on our site. We get lots of traffic. We also have these, they're about, it says 266 theology essays. I keep adding to these. The number is closer to about 280.
Wow.
And seminaries use these. Christian colleges use these essays. They're about 2,500 words a piece. They're on a variety of topics, from inspiration to local church stuff to theology to Trinity to biblical theology. Just these essays, and this is pretty amazing, just these 200 essays represent about 5% of all of TGC's traffic. So TGC is huge. 5% of these 280 essays, they yield over 3 million hits annually. Mm. just for these 280 little essays. Because mm-hmm. it shows you that people, and we can see that people are getting to these essays not through our site. They're getting to them just through Google searches, just through, hey, Trinity, or they'll just type in these keywords, and then these essays pop up. So that's pretty amazing. And, I want to double that number. It's expensive to produce these, cause I have to pay really good scholars money for quality work like this, but it's worth our money. It's worth our investment. So I'm slowly building these up. We've got about 280 now. That number needs to be about 500. And, I would love for it to hit actually 1,000. In the next 5 years, but I think the next year or two, I think I can get it to about 500, which would just be terrific. We also have 450 courses. Not all these courses are created by us. We pull them from a mm-hmm. number of different seminaries and colleges, but we have them there. We're about to add another course. It's like in the next couple of days that Don Carson did called Praying with Paul. Mm. So you may know that his little book on prayer that's published through Baker, it's in its second or third edition. It is absolutely amazing. And he recorded these little lectures that he did on it. We've got all the course material. We have everything bundled together, which will go live on our site in just in the next day or two, which is really exciting. We also have over 6,000 sermons, which is hard to believe on this website. And again, those are all, you can listen to them. We're trying to get those translated into different languages. Well, they first need to be transcribed.
Oh, they're not.
So I have a guy who does
audio.
Yeah. So yeah, they're all audio, but I'm slowly over time transcribing them.
Yeah.
Yeah. With the help of AI, there's a guy who has who does like theology sermon transcription, and we work with, so he's been working through mostly Don Carson sermons, trying to get those intact, and then we'll eventually get those translated over. We also have Themelios. Do you know what? Have you heard of Themelios?
Of course. Yeah.
That's our academic journal. Yeah. That's about as high as we go at TGC. And I think it's the biggest theological journal in the world as far as its readership. We get over 2 million hits a year just on that journal, which is hard to believe. When I asked Don just the other week, I told him these numbers, and he was just astounded. He said that when he picked up the journal, so he was the one that took it from Themelios in print, and he was the one that got it online. When it was in its print form, and I think the date here is 2004, 2005, 2006, somewhere in there, it was read about 160,000 times a year. That's how many were printed and distributed.
Right.
The number is now over 2 million. So just to give you a sense of just what's happened with the journal. And it's because it's
accessible.
It's free. Well, and it's accessible. And it's great scholarship.
I appreciate what Themelios has done, but I've got a bone to pick with the journal industry. I don't know. Maybe you don't agree with me, but
take away, yeah. I know.
You don't have a dog in this fight, so to speak, or anyway, what I'm going to be annoyed with, but it's, I understand the old model and the economics of it. If you get into like the hard sciences, don't get me started. It's totally nuts. And the way all that money works, where you have to pay to get your own thing published.
Right.
And
right.
We don't have that in the theological world. And that's a whole inbred weird conflict of interest funding thing. And then even public money sometimes is used and the data is not accessible to the public. I don't even want to start on that.
It's crazy.
The theological world, Like, you know, sometimes I try to think about first principles and work backwards. So what's the goal of an academic journal? It's to advance knowledge and then to make it accessible so that people can learn and grow. Now, back in the day, all the, you had to go to these libraries to even get an to get access to these things. So the economic model of the journal typically is to sell to libraries subscriptions and to sell to journal databases, because that's where the students, that's how you get out to the students. And you have some individual subscribers. I know JETS, you know, Westminster Theological Journal, Mid-American Journal of Theology is tiny in relation to those others, but there are journals you still subscribe and you get them mailed to you. But I wonder, it just seems so odd to me. Wouldn't we just want to go to a model like an open access model? I can't imagine that you're even bringing home any money for this, because after you print the journal and mail it, it can't even really cover a $20 or $25 subscription, not much. But if you just put it online and did some sort of sponsorship model or donations, or it's, you know, you pay for access for the stuff that's brand new and then the, you know, back issues are entirely free online. Wouldn't that be better?
You would think. I mean, you have, you know, obviously some universities, I don't know how much money they invest in their journals. I'm sure that there's a budget line there for that.
Yeah.
The larger journals are supported by the university, and
sure.
It's not lucrative, I can tell you that. Yeah. You know, and it's very restricted. I think the most, and this is where I think your average scholar, now this is more in the biblical studies. That's how I can I can't speak to these other disciplines. Typically on the biblical studies side of things, and probably on the theology side, I think I can blend both of those. Publishing in journals is, I mean, it's great because you can focus on something that's narrow.
Of course.
You can get in depth there. You can really develop, you can really break new ground and do very interesting things. And it's great. The problem is that is not always the case. And what can happen and does happen quite frequently is that you'll get a scholar, typically a young scholar, who spends an inordinate amount of time on a journal. So maybe it takes that young scholar
writing an article,
six to 8 months to write an article.
Yeah.
You know, he or she is teaching a full-time load. They're busy. And so it's hard for them to write at first. And they spend a huge amount of time trying to get into a prestigious journal, and only like 20 people read it.
I know.
And I'm not exaggerating.
I know.
Or maybe a hundred people read it.
I know. It's crazy. The same thing's
hard,
true for
that's
academic presses.
True.
Not to, I mean, just to bolster your point, a friend of mine wrote an excellent, you know, just a tremendous, I won't narrow the subject down because I don't want to be talking out of school here, telling tales out of school, but he wrote an excellent piece in the biblical studies field, had it published with a reputable, very reputable, but academic press, like one of those presses where the books cost $200 or $300.
Right.
And came to me later. I told him, I go, there's great advantages for you doing this. And here are the advantages. The disadvantages are that hardly anyone's going to read it. It'll be in libraries, and you'll have this on your CV, and you know, you'll pass muster, and everyone will know, like, your quality, because you published with so-and-so. But at the same time, he's like, I think 100 people read it. He goes, I think even a guy who reviewed it for a journal didn't even read it, given the review.
Probably. So J.V. Fesco has an amazing story. He tells the story of his friend who worked for a year. It took this person a year to write an article. It was published at a very good journal.
Mm-hmm.
And only one person read it. Because you can see how many times it's been viewed.
Oh dear!
One person.
That's the reality. No one wants to talk about. And if you put, you also don't want to just appeal to the masses and just publish stuff that's clickbait and, you know, just Christian nationalism in your title and people are going to click it.
I think they're right, and I think so. Younger scholars, I do think that you do need to publish in those journals. And you've got to work your way up. You do need to go through those paces. And I think it's important. You should try to contribute But at the end of the day, you've got to be very careful about spending your time just so that one person or 10 people can read your stuff. I mean,
well, my gripe is more with the publishers that there could be better ways and better perhaps economic models for reputable journals to make the material more accessible.
Oh, and I think not
in terms of like difficulty, but not accessible in terms of making it easier or simpler, but making it more widely available so that we can read it, you know, and I don't have to have $1,000 journal subscription.
I am noticing that more and more publishers are starting to then choose, okay, well, we'll just have this article will be freely available, or maybe this issue will be freely. And so they're starting to play around with these types of models. But I agree, like this, I don't see how this can sustain itself over the long haul.
No, and my hope isn't that, I'm fearful that there will just be fewer journals. My hope is that they figure out a better way to publish high quality peer reviewed stuff in a way that is easily readable.
And I think even within evangelicalism, I mean, think about how many journals there are now, Midwestern, Southern, Jets. You could go down the line. We could name 20, 15 to 20. And in 10 years, my guess is that there'll be half just because the places running these, they can't afford to pick up the tab anymore. The price of printing and shipping has increased and they're going to have to either go online because it's going to reach the point people just aren't going to spend any money to get journals. I just don't see how, I mean, unless their institution is paying those bills, people just aren't going to spend $20, $50 a year out of their own money to pay for these journals. Those days are coming to a close.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, we got to figure I've let that
some
out.
Of mine
We don't have that problem on the Thamelia side of things.
No, that's my point. But have you guys journal, have it figured out?
Yeah, our journal, I was just looking at the numbers just the other day. We pretty much run neutral. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything that we spend on editing and all of that is we make up for in
either sponsorships or affiliate income.
Not sponsorship, but just with royalties.
Royalties. Oh, okay. There's creative ways to do it. People can figure it out. Affiliate income, you name it, whatever. People,
right.
You could figure it out. Donations.
So we went out because it's not, we don't get paid through our website. We actually get paid through other avenues, other access. So that's how we're able to do it. Mm-hmm. It's possible we do it. But you know, it's a longstanding journal.
All right. So if anyone's interested, call me or Ben, and we'll give you.
I inherited this. I can't tell you the inner workings of it. That's a Brian Tapp question.
No. Come on. You're short selling our new consulting business, and we're not promising results. We're not promising results, but we'll tell you if your idea stinks or not. That's what we'll do.
We could probably do that.
Just call Camden, call Ben, and we're just going to give you a thumbs up or a thumbs down. That's about as good as we can do.
Yeah.
tell me a bit, Ben. This is fun talking about the some of the inner workings or the backside of scholarship and that sort of thing. I love what you're doing at Carson Center. I love hearing about that. Want to hear more, especially as some of these newer projects start coming out and we could talk in greater detail about them. But let's talk a bit about New Testament studies in general and biblical theological studies, perhaps might be the more accurate term. I'd love to speak about this in terms of biblical literacy. I'd like to pick up a thread you mentioned earlier about the global need for training. So many even of the pastors around the world don't have any formal education. And if they have gone to seminary, who knows, most likely it hasn't been accredited by any institution and who knows what it is. So there's a need, but I'm wondering what your assessment is of the evangelical church in this moment in terms of there's been a renaissance of biblical theological studies the last 20 years. I think it's moving in a great direction, but I'm wondering where you think we presently are and what some of the global challenges are at the moment and how we might address some of those.
So your question is, What's the current state of biblical theology or biblical studies?
Let's say let's start with biblical theological studies, so the BT specifically.
Yeah.
You know, under New Testament, we can talk about that too, and I led with that. But I think it's more interesting to talk about not just the minutiae of either the Old Testament or the New Testament, but speaking about the Bible as a whole. In my estimation, I think we've, with a lot of your work, Greg Beale's work, other people's work, it's taken for granted now. We see a lot more frequently people interested and aware of biblical theology. That's a good thing. But there's still more work to be done. I'm curious what you think. Where are we in this path? If we look at Colossians 1:28, that we want to present to every person mature in Christ. Mm-hmm. And I think a prerequisite to being mature in Christ is to understand Luke 24 and how Christ is the sum and substance of all of Scripture. So if that's the end point, and we're a lot closer to it than we were 20 years ago, where do you think we are, and what's left? What are some of the challenges that remain?
Yeah, so I think about this quite a bit. My hands are in a lot of these editorial areas, mm-hmm. where this is kind of what I do. And one of those outlets is the New Studies in Biblical Theology. I edit that series with Don Carson. Mm-hmm. So the two of us work together with that. And the reason why I bring that up is because it's sort of the heartbeat of biblical theology, just cutting edge evangelical type resources. We published volume 62 last year, and which is hard to believe. Mm-hmm. In 2025, the series turns 30 years old. So I think that I can talk about that series, and it applies across the board. I think it's representative of what's happening elsewhere. And it's just an amazing series. I think it's one of the best series on the market, both Old Testament, New Testament, theology, everything. I cannot think of another series that has 62 volumes and still going very strong. Mm-hmm. So it's just a tremendous series. But I bring that up because it shows you how hungry people are. It shows you how interested publishers are in producing this stuff. And I'm not talking about just Crossway or just IVP Academic or IVP UK. I mean, it's everybody's honor. Everybody wants to get in on this, mm-hmm. because the church, the evangelical church, is very interested in this. In mm-hmm. fact, even outside evangelicalism, I still think there's some interest there. Mm-hmm. So that series is now, it's a UK distribution. It's IVP UK or Apollos, which is their academic imprint. And domestically here in the U.S., B&H, Brahman and Holman picked up the distribution. So the distribution was through IVP U.S. And now recently, just in the last month, the papers were signed. It's now being distributed with B&H. Hmm. And one of the reasons why IVP U.S. or IVP U.K. went with B&H, there are many reasons. One of them is because B&H is really trying to get into this biblical theology thing, this field. Mm-hmm. And because of its connection with the Southern Baptists, and so many Southern Baptists are really into biblical theology, it made B&H the logical choice for distribution here. So what we're seeing, so all that to say is everything that I'm seeing, both on the publisher side of things, both on the audience and the contributors, I mean, I have people come to me once a week, once every 2 weeks. Mm. You should see my emails. I mean, it's just, hey, I'm interested in writing for the series, uh-huh. or maybe it's something else that I'm working on and they want to partner up or whatever. I mean, I really do get people coming to me just all the time, mm-hmm. who want to write. Or on the other hand, I have people like you asking me, hey, what's it like? What's coming out? What are some of the new, because you see, and then publishers, then publishers come to me and say, hey, Ben, do you have anything that you want to write, right, or we want to get? So it's everybody. So whether it's the readers, the authors, mm-hmm. publishers, podcast people, they're mm-hmm. all asking, we want, or they're saying, we want more. Where is it? Give us more of this. I don't think it's declining. I asked Greg Beal a year or so ago, I said, do you think it's plateaued or it's in the state of decline? And he doesn't think so. And I don't think so. Mm-hmm. The question is, Candom, is it in a state of maturity?
Yeah, that is a good question.
That I have thought about that. And we're more mature.
Right.
Maybe we're a teenager. Maybe we're 14, 15. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we're driving the minivan yet. My son just turned 15 today, and permit is right around the corner. Yeah. So I've been thinking about driving.
Teenagers yeah.
Yeah, so I think we're far more mature than what we were 20 years ago, and that's without it. What's happening now, so two things have actually – this discussion of biblical theology is tied to another discussion, and that's the New Testament use of the old mm-hmm. and the use of the old and the old. Mm-hmm. So these two fields work really well together, and I can tell you this, that field – which is huge, is not slowing down at all. If anything, we're in the preteen. I think that field is in a preteen because the stuff that still has yet to be done is gigantic. I mean, I wrote on this for my dissertation.
Right.
And the stuff that I'm seeing that has not been published, that I'm like, that's a dissertation. I mean, it almost is. Every day I'm like, that's a dissertation. That's a dissertation. That's one. That's one. That's mm-hmm. one. They're all over the place. There's a ton of work. And because of that, so watch this. So once that work starts being generated, then we can move into biblical theology yeah. and start to synthesize and put the pieces together. Mm-hmm. So I don't think now here's the problem, Canton. I do think that this is a new thing. There are projects that seem to just be rehashing. We're like, yeah, we've already seen this 1,000 times. I'm not interested in that. I don't need to read it.
Right.
Somebody else wrote it. Right. I don't need to read it again.
Right.
That's kind of where we are. So maybe there's a little bit of oversaturation with some of these themes. But there are so many other interesting themes and interesting texts that have really gone untouched.
Mm-hmm.
So it's my job. It's my job to find what those themes are and what those passages are, and then to hunt down authors to then take that on. That's really what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's a good way to think about it. I would want people to be encouraged that there is a lot more work, that this isn't a field that's drying up. There are all sorts of open lanes. Whenever you're going to advanced study, whether a THM or a PhD or doing even, you know, some more advanced maybe MA work, whatever it is, we're just doing stuff independently. Or looking for your next project. Maybe you already have a PhD and you're looking for the next thing to work on. There's a million projects to go, and you're always looking for an open lane. You want to do something new and find carve out a space for you. There's a ton of places to go. So send Ben an email and he'll give you ideas.
Yeah. And the places, and see, here it is. This is it. If you only read biblical theology books, you're going to say, what else is there? What else? Everybody is talking. It's like, no, that's because you're not approaching it the right way.
Yeah, you're self-selected. You're only seeing the things that exist rather than the things that don't exist.
You're just reading the saturation.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to be reading the Bible and looking at connections that the Bible makes that have been relatively unexplored.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you, there are hundreds and thousands of those. Hundreds and hundreds. Like, they're all over the place. So you've got to be really careful about how you spend your time. Are you going to spend your time reading all this other stuff that's already been done, secondary literature, or are you going to spend most of your time in the text and sync? This is, I think, why a person like Greg Beal should be followed, because he spends his time in the text, finding connections that the text makes, and then exploring those connections. Do you see? He doesn't spend all of his time working through secondary sources and just thinking about it. No, that's not really him.
Yeah.
Some people do that.
But, you know, surely you, we all agree that it's good to be conversant with the secondary literature and stay abreast of the current scholarship. But our primary source and our primary source of ideas, the grist for the mill, just needs to be the text of the Bible. And that's true. That's true for theologians too, not just biblical theologians, but systematicians, dogmaticians. Like, we ought to look at, what's your diet? You know, this is going to be an indictment upon many people, myself included, and say, just percentage-wise, in terms of what are you reading? How much is straight biblical work, whether in English or preferably an original language work? How, what percentage of your reading is that occupied?
Oh, it's crazy. You know? Don't even... Yeah, it, and you know, I mean, this is, I mean, I've been doing this for, this is 2024. I started my PhD in 2004, so it's been 20 years, if you want to include that. Mm-hmm. And I have never once thought, I wish I would spend more time reading what other people
read. Right.
I've never thought that. I've never been like, you know what, if only I could just get a little bit more sense, if I were only a little bit more sensitive as to the cutting edge, like you really could spend your life at the cutting edge of things.
Yeah.
But again, you're only working with just a little slice of how things operate. Mm. So I always encourage students and I always encourage my friends, look, spend more time in the text, look for the connections, pay attention to the allusions, pay attention to how these things are working.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you do that, then you can then start to build very interesting ideas and build new themes and watch them. That's what's exciting to me. I mean, reading guys like Matt Harmon or Michael Morales, like you read these guys and you're like, do you see they're not creating new things. They're just discovering what's there.
Yeah, because they spent so much time reading and studying their Bible.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. And it's easy. So that's what I'm saying. So if you only read secondary literature, you're like, oh, we're in a state of, we're plateauing. Everybody's saying the same thing. Yeah. That's because now you're not reading the right thing.
Yeah. No, that's helpful. I know we got to keep true to our word and hear our schedule here. We're running out of time. Maybe we're already out of time, but I would like to give you an opportunity, Ben, perhaps to provide some final words or a call to action. How can people find out more about the Carson Center or stay abreast of new projects, new updates that people are updated in terms of the goings on of your new work?
Yeah. I mean, if you just type in the Carson Center into Google and we'd love for you to subscribe to our newsletter where we release all of our new resources. For example, we have a new thing that just came out a couple of months ago called the Best Commentaries. Mm. We go from Genesis to Revelation.
Yeah, that's
neat. And we list, it's annotated. So if you Revelation, read these. Genesis, and we have different levels of reading.
That's great.
It's all right there. And we're really trying to get more into that. I was telling Colin Hansen, my boss, I would love to work that out. I would love to do it for systematic theology, for biblical theology, if you want to get in biblical theology, you want to get into the advanced stuff, read these. If you're intermediate, read this. You're a beginner, read this. Like systematics, start here, go there. Doctrine of God, start here, go there. Like there's no reason why this should not all be mapped out for people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these different levels of reading and you know, places to start and what books to feature. We already know it. We just need to like upload it.
You got to package it and make it very clear so that you can help people along.
Exactly right.
Not hide things from people, but to make it very obvious and give people an easy path to follow.
Yeah. So So just if you sign up for our newsletter or just type in the Carson Center, you can discover all these things. And that's really one of our newest things. I can't mention, I've got a lot of fun things. Yeah. When we hit the record button, when we turn it off, then we can talk about some of the,
everyone's going to love that.
Some of the juicy bits, but I can't mention it now.
We'll talk about it when it's time.
Not to work out.
We'll talk about it when it's time. In the fullness of time, in podcast land.
In the fullness of time.
In podcast land. Yeah. Well, that's great. Yeah. Head on over to thegospelcoalition.org/the-carson-center. You can do it. You just find it via search. I'll put links to the episode, to the website in the episode description. There's a wealth of material here already, and a lot more to come in the future. And stay tuned. Subscribe to their email newsletter. That's going to be good and beneficial to you. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today. It's always great to talk to you. Thanks also for the update on the Festool Domino. Maybe next time we'll talk dust collections. Does that sound good to you?
Oh, yeah. I'm big. I have two Festool vacuums. I'm a big believer.
Okay. Well, check out our website as well, reformforum.org. Especially take a look at our new books. We have Fullness of Joy by Dan Ragusa. Great for the holiday season, for the Christmas season. Good stocking stuffer. Get that. There's a companion course on that, entirely free. Lessons that would be great for a Sunday school. And then we have Order in the Offices, second edition. Hardcover, dust jacket, Smithsonian. It's beautiful. It's gorgeous. It's an excellent book. ReformedForum.org/store. I want to thank everybody for watching and for listening. And we hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.